Hello, Namibia. A very good afternoon to you from wherever you're listening in from. Now, whether you're tuning in from the golden dunes of Swakopmund to the lively streets of Katimamulilo, or from the proud cattle post of Gobabis to the breezy coastlines of Roodepoort, and all the way to the bustling heart of Windhoek. A very good afternoon to you, wherever you're tuning in from. I'm your host, Nafa Happy Juju, and I will be your storyteller and your midweek energy booster right here on Eagle FM, keeping you company up until 14:30. Now it's Friday, the 10th of October, 2025, and you know what that means? The weekend is almost here. And before we do step into the weekend, let's take one more deep dive into the stories shaping our nation. Now, Fridays are known for a special rhythm, a mix of reflection and anticipation, a reminder there's still room to finish the week strong, to reset, and maybe even surprise oneself. You're tuned into On The Radar News Analysis right here, the show where headlines meet heartlines. We don't just report the news, we unpack it, connect it, and ground it right where it matters most with you, the people driving Namibia's story every single day. And remember, your voice is part of the dialogue, and can be part of the dialogue. So join in on the conversation on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or WhatsApp, or even connect to us via Eagle FM website or Eagle FM app. Because here, right here on the Radar News Analysis, your thoughts don't just matter, they move the narrative forward. So whether you're cushioning in from Oshakati, grabbing lunch in Ochoarundo, working hard in Kathmandu, or chilling at home in Rundu, thank you for choosing Eagle FM as your Friday's companion. Stay with us. Let's jump right in today's top stories. Namib Mills has announced a reduction of up to 16% in the prices of its maize and mahango product ranges, effective 13 October 2025. Now, according to the company's statement released this week, the decision follows improved conditions in the local agriculture sector, with a recent improvement in the availability and cost of raw materials within the country has created an opportunity to extend the savings to the loyal consumers of the company's maize and mahango products. Now, joining us in studio to speak telephonically now is ST Ackerman, who is the general manager at Namib Mills. A very good afternoon to you, Ackerman, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Of course, we the consumers are very thrilled, but we want to hear from the horse's mouth itself about the 16% price reduction in maize and mahango product. Is that true or is it fabricated? Sorry. Come on, tell us.
No, it is true. We've announced a price decrease on our maize meal and mahango meal product range to be effective from mid-October.
What actually prompted Namib Mills to look into this price reduction of up to 16%?
Yeah, so we, on a continuous basis, we assess what our biggest cost driver in the cost of basic food, specifically maize and mahango, is the raw material cost that goes into the product. So we've seen over the last couple of months that there's been good rains in the southern African region, which has boosted crop yields on maize and mahango specifically. And this has resulted in the supply side of the grains increasing. And with the supply increasing, there's a reduction in the cost of the maize. And so as it forms a big part of our input cost into the product, we've taken the decision to give that advantage through to our loyal consumers of our maize meal and mahango product range.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Is it just maize and mahango products? And I think probably for those who are wondering, what maize and mahango products are you talking about? I know for sure the top score is in one of those, because that's one of those on our radar always when we go food shopping. So what particular products are we talking about here?
So top score is our flagship maize meal product. So it'll apply to top score. And then we've got various other brands in the maize meal category as well, which would include Ace Maize, Number One, and Everyday. And Meme Mahango is the product on the Mahango side.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Ackerman, When we talk about increase in raw materials, does Namib Mills itself perhaps try to help enhance a local production of greens right here in Namibia? I mean, we have our green schemes. Is it, are there some sort of advice or training that you also extend to them so that we can benefit from this, not just now, but also in the long run and perhaps on other products as well, especially if our local people are able to produce these things and obviously you can get them at a cheaper price? Is that something that that Namib Mills also looked into?
Yeah, so we're part of, if you look at the Namibian local agricultural production scheme, there is a big drive to promote local production, obviously because of the benefit it has to the economy as well as from a food security point of view. So from a maize and wheat production point of view, as well as Mahungu, we as local grain millers are part of a scheme where we procure all of the locally produced maize, mahungu and wheat during that harvest period, and we process it and sell it into the local market. And so the scheme is there to promote local production. It's the Namibian Agronomic Board from a regulatory point of view under the Ministry of Agriculture is also part of this. And so, as I mentioned, the big drive is there to promote local production because of the added advantages it has to the local economy and then to promote food security as well for Namibia.
True. Now, come on, before I do let you go, lastly, in terms of looking at the 16% reduction in maize and mahungu products, your company could have decided that, you know what, we're going to do some gift hampers, walk away with this and this. But why specifically did you target everybody who is then a fan or a consumer of mahungu and maize meal? Why did you target to cut down on that and it can benefit everybody who is then is a consumer of such?
Our point of departure, specifically on basic food, is to always have a transparent pricing model. So we do have periods where there's drought and you would see soft commodity prices going up, and in turn we will then have to increase prices to accommodate the higher input costs. But yeah. Likewise, if prices do come down, we like to be transparent in that. And I think it's the right thing to do in terms of our consumer base, which is loyal and support us in terms of our products and what we produce. And it's only fair then to give those price reductions through to the consumer again.
That's very true. Sorry, last one. Of course, this year has been giving quite abundant rainfall. Now, what if not next year? We're hoping still for very good rainfall, starting now up already. But then what if a couple of years from now also still the rainfall is not so good? Is there something that you're also perhaps discussing on the table about storage maybe of water in order so to help maybe the farmers, I don't know, discussions with them also in how to pay, maybe store water? We get really good rainfall, but maybe storage is also another struggling area that we encounter.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Sorry, your question was related to the storage.
Yes, about rainfall.
Rainfall specifically, yeah. So I think That's the big thing with farming is it's very dependent on rainfall. And we in Namibia are really cognizant of that fact as well, because our agricultural sector relies heavily on rain.
Mm-hmm.
That's a reality with crop and grain production as well. So there are areas in Namibia where you mentioned the green schemes earlier that produces grains under irrigation.
Yeah.
So I think that ensures that you've got continuous production through periods where it might be drier. But the reality is that you would find that rain plays a big role in grain, not only in Namibia, but globally. And you'll find that in periods where the if you want to call it, the maize harvest areas go through dry patches, you will find that the whole supply of grain reduces because of the yields reducing as a result of less rain. So it's a reality of the world that we live in. From a grain production point of view, rainfall at this point in time remains a big factor in terms of the eventual yields and the amount of crop available for food production.
Hakaman, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis. And also thank you for that 16% reduction in maize and mahungu products at Namib Mills.
No, thank you very much for calling, and thanks for all the listeners, thanks for all our loyal supporters and consumers. We really appreciate it.
Okay. And there you had it from SD Ackerman, who is the general manager at Namib Mills. Now, still speaking about this, we have reached out to economist Nginomina Very Hangara to talk about or dissect the importance of enhancing local grain production. Let's take a listen to that conversation now. A very good afternoon to you, Nginomina Very Erastus, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Yes, thank you for having me, and good afternoon to you.
But before we get into that conversation, let's pause right here for a scheduled commercial break and get it out of the way, and then we can return to our conversation. Stay tuned.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe udite opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana konongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya.
Usafe's combo for just $99 Namibian is so popular that we gladly repeat it. Hurry to get yours. All your essential products for just $99 Namibian. 1 kilogram each of Rice King rice, top score or Bokomo Super Maize meal, Sugar King white or brown sugar, 500 grams Pasta Polana or Pasta King, and 750 milliliter Rite brand sunflower seed oil. That's 5 products for only $99 Namibian. We all save at Usafe.
Vano ile koshiwana kononge shefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano
okupitiramo. And now for that conversation with
Nina Menavari. A very good afternoon to you, Nina Menavari Erastus, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Yes, thank you for having me, and good afternoon to you.
Now, Namib Mills has announced a price decrease of up to 16% on its maize and mahango product. Now, what's the impact of the price decrease on household consumers' basket?
Yeah, we let us contextualize things for people to understand. And before even I go there, actually it's very important to give credit where it's due. Where you are seeing a company, a private company that operate on profit, that they have covered expenses, no government subsidy and things like that, and you are seeing them actually taking deliberate effort to reduce prices. You know, we barely hear such a types of move in the market.
Yeah.
So we can say, man, big up to Namib Mill. If you look at their product range, I think they sell most, and you go in people's kitchen, I think they sell most of the staple food, especially for the urban dwellers or for urban dwellers. They depend on their product range. So it's really, really good or positive to hear from them that they take such a decision on their own without the pressure from government or subsidy, things like that. So it's honestly something which is really, really worth saying thank you, even for me as an individual or as a consumer. Now, to get back to your question, if you go in our inflation figures and analysis, you will, and the consumer basket, you will get to understand that about 75% of people's income go to transport, go to electricity and housing and food. But again, if you go deeper again, you'll get to understand that majority of Namibians, they spend more than 50% to 60% just on food.
Mm-hmm.
So meaning that the income of, and if you look at the average wage of Namibian, it's around 3,000 to 4,000.
Yeah.
And if you look at if you go and you take a trolley to go fill in the basic, it will cost you around already 2,000. So a majority of Namibian people spending 60 to 70% on food. So for Namib Mill, which actually produces staple food, most of the consumed food, and for them to announce that 16%, the price are going down by 16%, that is a big deal. It will have a big impact.
Indeed.
It means now the consumers are able to fill their trolley of food with more compared to before, because 16% is a lot. It's a lot, really. A decline of 16%, it will make a difference. So it means now they're able to fill their trolley of food with more, or actually even now able to pay DSTV because most of Namibian consumers, they do not do luxury.
Mm.
They cannot afford luxury like just DSTV or GoTV. They cannot afford that. So when you reduce now the expenditure on food because things are cheaper, you enable these people now to be able to spend on other things that matters also to them.
Okay.
So like that, you are improving their livelihood.
Yeah.
Because if I'm only spending on food, I cannot even afford a beer as a luxury. Then like that, the human development of people is really, really, really going down. And it's because we are now just working for food and transport.
Mm.
So you now reducing the cost of one component, it enabled me to bring in something, even to go buy a T-shirt.
Yeah.
So that is the significance of it, meaning that I'm able now to add more product to my consumer basket, or I'm able to consume something that I also enjoy. But due to the fact that I spend more on food, I couldn't. So it's such a big deal, and we wish more companies to be able to go to such a level, because I think only two companies that reduce their prices here. Those are the only ones that we hear. But we don't hear others, even in the service industry, even in the transport industry. We don't hear them. Like even from the transport side, they all just keep adding and keep adding. But even when price go down, when subsidies are added, we don't hear such a type of things happening. So
I don't really feel
it. Yeah. And the cost of living in Namibia is keep going up. You see, but there are those institutions like the transportation where there are government subsidy. There is where in terms of water and electricity, where there are government investment, but you do not even hear them reducing the price of water, the price of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
We just keep hearing increases. So that's what I'm saying. It's really approachable to Namibmil, a private company not being subsidized, looking at the cost of production and the supply of input and them able to say, I think we are okay. Our margins are good. The overall cost of living in Namibia is expensive, and because we are doing well, we can give back to the community, to our consumer in such a way. It's such a big deal, and this is the type of economy we want to build.
Mm-hmm. You know, you speak about 16% is a lot, and I take the figure of a 10 kg top score, which costs a runabout in the shop now, 130 Namibian dollars. 16% of that's saving 20 Namibian dollars and 80 cents. Something that a consumer can really feel in their pocket, yeah, on just one product alone.
Yes, a taxi is $13. A bread is what? It's around $15. So meaning I'm able to add an extra bread for my kid.
Exactly.
You see, or use it even for lunch. For us who eat from the members and the tattoo self-fed cook, look, my daily spending on my lunch is $20. A fed cook and a piece of meat and soup. You know, that is my lunch for a day. So it's very, very, and it's not only on top score. So, on pasta and other things that they produce. And those are the staple food. Now, imagine if I take a 20, a 20, or a 30 from all of them, and you aggregate it. That's why I'm saying that it's such a big deal. And if you can actually come from multiple sectors, even if MTC say today we are also reducing the cost of our M-time, Telkom do the same thing, you know. So, you know, look, when it comes to the cost of living, people think it's only a government role.
Mm.
It has to come from multiple sectors to make it the cost of living better for everybody. It has to come from all different sectors to come through. Because for this impact to be significant, imagine if the service sector comes through. Now, the banking sector also came through last week. We are hearing now that the cost of money is also going down.
Mm.
So meaning now, even the people who used to pay the prime lending at such a rate, now it also reduced. And you added the price of food going up. Now, the Minister of Mines also can now that we are subsidizing fuel, we do the same thing. At NAMPOWER, we keep giving you capital to invest in electricity. Do the same. If we want to improve and reduce the cost of living and enable everybody to live a decent life, we have to come from all dimension of the economy.
Yeah.
Because it's not always about wages. Because sometimes we just think that we need to increase people's wages. No. Sometimes it's not. It's just actually making things like Namibmil, making things like the commercial bank. Let us go now to the electricity. Let us go now to the cost of housing. You know, if we combine a reduction in those very significant products and services that are being consumed by our household, we will provide a decent living to them. Yeah.
Without increasing their salaries.
Yes.
Now, another thing, Namib Mills has cited that the decrease was due to increased grain supply. Can you elaborate on the importance of enhancing local grain production?
And actually, that is the most important factor. You cannot do whatever you want to do if you do not supply input.
Mm-hmm.
Because the cost of production, the cost of raw material is what matters. That is the main ingredient. Whatever we want to do, colleagues, it all go back to the farmer. It all go back to the land. It all go back to the land. What are we doing with the land? And it's grain. We can talk about oil and whatever and but it all go back to the farm. So now you are hearing that there is a good supply of grain. There is now mahangu and maize, which was after last year's Bambi harvest. Now imagine if we can do more.
Yeah.
Imagine if we can commercialize every small-scale farmer. The rainy season is starting. How prepared are we in terms of seed, in terms of tractors? In terms, did we provide the capacity? Did we provide the right cultivars? Did we provide the right training so that we capitalize on everything?
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about raw material supply. That is what matters. And that's why Namib will say, because we are having adequate supply of grain, mango and maize, it made it easier for us to reduce our prices. Because there is adequate supply, the prices go down.
Absolutely.
And that's why now it's very, very important for the country to increase its supply of grain. Because right now we import from India, mango from India. We are importing maize from many countries around the world, from South Africa and things like that. But Zambezi is able to produce adequate mango. So you see, it's all about increasing the supply of raw material if you want it to impact the end consumer price. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Would you say, can the green schemes and the green storage play a role on the grain supply as well?
Definitely. Because you have around 11 green schemes, Madam Happy. 11.
Yeah.
And believe me, these are effect. None of these green schemes are producing to capacity. Many of them are probably operating at 50% and some of them below 50%. So meaning, the land is available, the infrastructure in place. It's just what we are doing with them. And the investment we are making, the capital, the operational capital. So you do not even have to create a new green scheme anymore.
Mm.
You have 12 underutilized green schemes.
Yeah.
All you have is just to increase yield, increase output, recapitalize, provide operational capital on time and get the inputs on time.
Yeah.
And again, you have the storage, more than four storage. You have one in Katima, you have something in Omsia, you have something in Otsanti. And these are big, big storage of grain. So meaning that we can produce adequately and go store for 2 years. And we are able to stabilize the prices because we are storing all our grain. You see, so this is the value chain of the grain production is there. The millers are ready. The farm, the land is there, the storage is there, the millers are there. All you have to do is to do what needs to be done. Cultivate the land on time.
Yeah.
Invest in the right technology. Invest in the right in the right capacity. And this is actually the most interesting thing. We are actually even now sampling to produce ammonia nitrate, ammonia sulfate, which is actually needed in the agriculture sector. Now imagine if we can do all those things, because when people talk about green hydrogen, we are not talking about ammonia, nitrate, and sulfate, which is a critical component in agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the storage are there, the land is there, and the most expensive thing actually in agriculture is fertilizer. But we do not want to invest in dowries and see how far they can go to produce ammonia nitrate. So you see, we are here doubting ourselves. So the storage is there, the land is there. It's the most expensive thing is what? It's just the seed, the fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can just increase our investment in the farms that are able to produce the seed and in the infrastructure, the company that are able to produce fertilizer, then we are good to go. We are able to produce adequately. But we just talk about agriculture. If you listen to everybody, especially politicians, agriculture, they say, no, agriculture. Then you ask, how much are you willing to spend then?
Yeah.
They're like, the budget is short. You see, we have people who want to speak and say statement. The facts are there. Namib Mill is telling you, the main reason I'm reducing prices is because I have adequate supply of grain.
Yeah.
Now, go to Sadiko Ngoro, go to Kalimbeza, go to Etunda, and make sure they produce grain. We have the drums in Otsandi waiting to be filled. Avail the budget. Don't talk about agriculture is the key. Avail the capital. Avail the budget. Give it to the farmers in there to do the work. That is how we're going to keep it like that. Mm. And the price of Namib meal will never go up again if you supply them with cheaper grain.
True. And also attend to their problems, like, you know, for Donga Linear, one of their main struggles or main expenses is electricity, which it goes up to even $1 million monthly. So if we can maybe tackle that as well, who knows how far they can actually produce those grains for us?
We can. Look, we can. We have been talking about, no, we will put solar on them. So, okay, good. Then why are we not doing it? Guys, we in Namibia, we talk a lot. We talk a lot. It's just execution. NAMPOWER and NORED, we all funded them. We all funded them. They are funded by taxpayers' money. You cannot tell me that we can actually come up with a price, discriminatory prices for farmers. Nobody will say anything, because if we sell electricity cheaper to Sadiko Ngoro and Etunda, it's very important for our food security. So all we have to do is just to tell NORED and to tell everybody, when it comes to farmers, the farmers can buy electricity cheaper. Why? Because it makes food cheaper. These are all the decisions we need to make. But we are just there talking about mental health everywhere and sorry, and gender equality. Colleagues, we have to make such a type of decisions and policy directive.
In order to indirectly help people's mental health.
Why are you talking about mental health? If mental health is affected by people, the cost of living. We are looking at things that are so far instead of addressing things from the root. Food security and the cost of food. If your people are spending 70% on food, so your concern is about production, nothing else. Don't go run when they are sick. No, address the problem that can make them sick because they cannot afford the cost of living. And 60% to 70% is food, basic meals.
Yeah. You know, Minamari, thank you so much for those insights. I always appreciate it when you make time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Thank you so much, ma'am.
Okay.
We pause here now. We'll be back shortly with more right here on the Reader News Analysis.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Reader News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia, make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Namibia Botswana Bi-National Commission Presidential Summit has taken place today at the State House, and addressing the at the, addressing the people at the summit is President Duma Boko of Botswana. Let's take a listen to his speech.
There are two types, two broad types of people, Bruce Lee tells us in a book, or two books actually, that I stumbled upon. One is called The Tao of Bruce Lee. The other, Letters of the Dragon, pages 115 to 117. Bruce Lee writes a poem there. I don't think you know him to be a poet. But he was more than a poet, he was actually a philosopher, in addition to the other things that he did, for which he is renowned. He asks a profound question, says, having distinguished two broad types, he says there are doers and doubters. In this poem, he says, there are doers and doubters. And he says, which are you? And I pose that question to you, to all of us. Which are we? Are we doers or are we doubters? And he says, the doubters said, men can't fly. The doers said, maybe, but we'll try. And finally soared into the morning glow, while the doubters watched from down below. Which are we? Are we doers or are we doubters? When I spoke with the president privately, we agreed, both of us, that our ascendance to the leadership of our two countries has ignited so much hope amongst our people. They look forward, they yearn for change. They have full faith and confidence in our ability to deliver the change. But that is also very dangerous because they are impatient. The people are hungry out there. The people are unclad. They are unhoused. They are unfed. They want to eat. They want to work. They want to eke out a meaningful living within the borders of their countries. The expectations that lie on our shoulders are enormous. And if we sit twiddling our thumbs, consuming ourselves in doubt and misapprehension, we will disappoint those multitudes that have invested so much hope in all of us. We need to respond to their cries, to their pleas, to their conjurations, and we need to respond immediately, decisively, boldly. That's what we are called upon to do, otherwise we will not be fit. So we are challenged every day, every step of advance, to prove our worth and mettle. Are we worthy of the responsibility that has been bestowed on each and every one of us? And so we are called upon now, in a practical manner, to make choices. How do we deploy the limited resources at our disposal? And these resources include yourselves, the personnel, the natural resources, the financial opportunities. How do we mobilize, marshal these in the service of the people that have given us the responsibility to lead them? That's the first. The second is, and this is a requirement of strategy. They'll teach you this when they teach you strategy. Choice. What choices do you make? Choose to be a doubter. Choose to be a doer. A lot turns on the choices that we make or we fail to make. Errors both of commission and of omission. We need to be alive to these realities if we are to be of any impact at all. The second is empathy. In strategy, you need to have empathy. You need to consider the feelings and the interests of the others. In this case, Botswana must consider the feelings, the sentiments and the interests of Namibia. And Namibia must do the same. It speaks to what I will call plausible complementarity between these two nations. Plausible complementarity. Botswana must complement Namibia. Namibia must complement Botswana. Not just in talk, in word, but in action, in deed. So all the sermons that you preach must now be translated into reality. They must be enacted in the lives of real people, those on the downside of your societies, those in the dumps catching hell. Your choices, your actions must translate into something meaningful for them to transform their lives. Empathy. The third is alliance, solidarity. These opportunities for cooperation, collaboration. Some of them new. Some of them untried and untested. And when any person is confronted with untried and untested opportunities for collaboration, they recoil and they default into what they know and what they have done. But what we know and what we've done, the bulk of it hasn't worked or worked as well as we thought it would. So we are forced to reflect even on those routinized and collectivized, stylized forms of action and thought patterns, to review them, cast aside some of them, and bring into existence radically new approaches and strategies that will work for both countries, for other countries in the region, for the continent and for the world. So we need to strengthen our alliance. Botswana, Namibia. What does this entail? We must avoid unnecessary competition. Botswana must not seek to outcompete Namibia. Namibia must not seek to outcompete Botswana. There must be objective, plausible complementarity between these two neighbor states. What are we competing on? Namibia is a beef-producing country. Botswana is a beef-producing country. There's no need for any competition between these two countries. Namibia has a population of about 3 million, Botswana 2.5. What are we competing on? There is need for collaboration, for coming together, for coalescing around common goals, visions, and outcomes. And so when Botswana fails to meet its quota to the EU because its national herd has drastically diminished, Namibia must step in and fill the gap. That's plausible complementarity. When Namibia cries out to Botswana and says, "Your policies in relation to cement have adversely affected my people," Botswana must pause, reflect its empathy, and say, how do I accommodate the interests of Namibia in order for Namibia to also accommodate my own interest? That's the plausible complementarity I'm talking about. The fourth element, cause and effect. These actions that we undertake, what determinate outcomes do they bring? Not what we, in our suppositions and presuppositions, think. What does reality bear out? Human causality. That's what we need to look at this level, as leaders of an emerging continent that is the future of the world. Otherwise, we are too weak to be at the helm, at the front. We've got to justify our being as that emerging continent, the leaders of the next, the now frontier. So we must know the best that is known and think the best that is thought in the world. We must become thought leaders on the African continent. We're not begging to be recognized. We claim our place. We say, you are forced to look at us. You are forced to listen to us. We're not begging. We're not negotiating. We are staking our claim to the leadership of the world as Africans. And the last issue for me is time. We're not going to be thinking, talking for an inordinate amount of time. All these decisions, these discussions must be operationalized. They must be time-bound. We must put down timelines, strict timelines, and stick to those timelines. Because we have a revolution to effect on the African continent, in our countries. And a revolution is not endless. It's not amorphous. It's not shapeless. And a revolution is sometimes convulsive. Causes ruptures. It causes uncertainty. Causes discomfort. It's a revolution. That's what it is. And it is not indeterminate. It has to achieve outcomes within a period of time. And so, many of these programs that we are looking at here, these memoranda that we will sign, how much time do we have before we see tangible results sounding in jobs, in improved livelihoods, in improved infrastructure, in enhanced opportunities for growth and collaboration? How much time are we ascribing to them? These are the elements, in my humble view, that will enable us to provide formidable answers to the problem of context and contextuality.
Very interesting conversation right there by President Duma Boker. As he's speaking at the Namibia Botswana Bi-National Commission. Of course, two things I do take away is collaboration. He calls on collaboration between the two countries, that is Namibia and Botswana. Of course, instead of competing, the two countries can come together and collaborate, you know, in those things that they have common ground on. They can rather come together, perhaps bring their expertise, ideas, since the summit was first the senior ministers, senior officials, and then the minister summit and our presidential summit. It's one of those things that sincerely needed for two countries to come together and work on policies that can help benefit both countries. And another point that I do really pick up from him is how he speaks about time. How much time are we allocating to those memorandums of understanding that are being signed? It's say that there's already 47 memorandums of understanding that have been in place or existing already between Botswana and Namibia, and 8 new ones that have been signed now today. Now, the question comes in to say, how much time are they giving to those to say within this time of frame, within this framework of time, this and this should have been achieved? You know, there's one thing about, of course, our leaders giving good speeches, but then again, the people want to see tangible results on ground. So it's very important that time also be allocated so that when that time comes, we can follow up questions and ask, how far then? How did this go? Where did this end us? But nonetheless, so let's pause right here. This is on the Reader News Analysis. We'll be back with more exciting news right now after the commercial break. Stay tuned.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana kono ngeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebito tanjuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda do inawa nune uto otukwetera o special ange tashake ngejepa omarudi tayo loka opone ushengi fenawa.
And for now, let's call up our winner, Friday's winner of the 500 ShopRite USAFE gift voucher. Are you perhaps the lucky winner? Well, make sure that you always tune in right here on the Reader News Analysis. A very good afternoon.
Very good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, ma'am. Who am I speaking to? Because you're speaking to Ndafa Happy Juju from Eagle FM.
Oh, you're speaking to Martha.
Martha.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Martha, where are you calling us from? I mean, calling. Where are you based right now?
I'm currently in Windhoek.
You're currently in Windhoek?
Yes.
Okay, I have very good news for you. But right now, just know that you are live on air, okay?
Oh, okay.
So you are this Friday's lucky winner of the 500 Namibian dollars ShopRite USAFE gift voucher.
Oh, hi.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah?
Yep. Well.
Okay.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Sure. What are you going to do with your $500 gift voucher?
Probably just going to restock my fridge.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing more.
Okay. So you luckily answered the question of three products you can buy with the 99 Namibian dollar gift hamper. I certainly hope that you're also going to buy yourself the hamper.
Definitely, I will.
Okay. Martha, thank you so much and congratulations. Our team will definitely call you up and notify you how you can pick up your gift voucher.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
And that's Friday's lucky winner of the 500 Namibian dollar ShopRite USAFE gift voucher. Now, should you want to also walk away with a gift voucher? And remember, this competition is running even up until 2026. So you're in it for a very good surprise. Make sure that you tune in every day, weekdays, Monday to Friday on the Reader News Analysis, and tune in on Friday around about this time, 1:45 from there onwards, so that you can find out if you are the lucky winner. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. And for those of you who want to come through and your opinions or contributions right here on the Reader News Analysis, 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Did you know the University of Namibia Alumni Association is hosting its elective annual general meeting on 5th November this year? Nominations are now open and will be closing on 13 October 2025. All fully paid up alumni members are eligible to be nominated. Now, to qualify, a fellow alumni must nominate you, and your nomination must be seconded by two paid up alumni members of the association. To submit your nomination form, visit the Alumni tab on the UNAM website and click on Alumni AGM Nomination. Don't miss your chance to lead.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Namibia's annual headline inflation rose slightly to 3.5% in September 2025, up from 3.32% in August, driven mainly by higher transport costs, transport and housing costs, that is according to the latest figures from the Namibia Statistics Agency, NSA. Now, transport inflation rebounded to 1.3% year on year after a 1.0% contraction in August, contributing 0.2 percentage points to the overall inflation rate. Now, the increase was largely attributed to higher vehicle prices, with the purchase of vehicles subcategory accelerating to 4.4% year-on-year from 2.8% the previous month. Now, the Namibia Statistics Agency noted broad prices increase across motorcycles, motorbikes, and motorcars, marking the first positive transport contribution since March. Rising international oil prices, driven by ongoing geopolitical tensions, also added to cost pressures. Moreover, the stronger Namibia dollar helped limit domestic fuel prices increases, keeping pump prices unchanged for October, with petrol at $20.37, diesel 50 ppm at $19.92, and diesel 10 ppm at $20.02 per liter. Now, despite this stability, analysts caution that persistent geopolitical risks could keep transport inflation elevated in the coming months. Meanwhile, inflation in housing, water, electricity, gas, and other fuels edged up to 3.6% year-on-year in September from 3.4% in August, contributing 0.9 percentage points to the headline inflation. The uptick was driven by higher utility costs. Electricity and gas rose 3.0%, and water and sewage costs climbed 4.0%. Now, though rental inflation eased slightly to 3.7% from 4.2% a year earlier, despite the moderation, rents remain the strongest rising component in the housing category, keeping household budgets under pressure. Now, on a positive note, food and non-alcoholic beverages inflation moderated to 4.9% year-on-year in September from 5.2% in August. Price growth slowed across most food categories except for fish at plus 9.0%, meat at plus 3.0%, oils and fats at plus 2.6%, and fruit at plus 4.8%. Improved regional agricultural output and favorable rainfall projections have supported price stability, with the 2025 Agricultural Outlook Conference in Windhoek forecasting stronger crop yields and improved production outlook into 2026. Month-to-month, overall inflation was unchanged at 0.0%, while core inflation remained steady at 3.6%, indicating that underlying price pressures are largely contained. Now, looking ahead, inflation is expected to average around 3.5% for 2025. Mild upward pressure from transport and housing is likely to persist, but this effects should be offset by moderating food prices. The inflation outlook remains broadly stable, though rising global oil prices and geopolitical risks could pose short-term upside risks.
Following recent downward surprises, headline inflation increased to 3.5% year-on-year in September from 3.2% in August, mainly reflecting higher transport prices and persistent pressure in the housing and utilities category. In this regard, transport inflation rebounded to 1.3% year-on-year from a contraction of minus 1% in August and contributed 0.2 percentage points to headline inflation, marking its first positive contribution since March of this year. Housing, water, electricity, gas, and other fuels inflation also edged up to 3.6% from 3.4%, while on the positive side, food inflation moderated slightly from 5.2% in August to 4.9% in September. Therefore, we expect inflation to remain around 3.5% by year-end, and therefore remaining relatively stable compared to historical norms. However, we expect mild upward pressure to continue from the transport category and from housing, and this will slightly be offset by lower food prices, as we expect ongoing improvements in agricultural output given favorable rainfalls experienced in the 2025 planting season and even more favorable rainfalls expected in the 2026 planting season.
And there you had it from the Namibia CPI review. With that being said, let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. When we return, we'll be telling you what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Stay tuned.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening, we ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia, make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now we tell you what's making headline in terms of our currencies. And we always compare the Namibian dollars to other currencies so that you can know what's happening and keeping you updated. Now, of course, today, one US dollar is equals to 17 Namibian dollars and 24 cents. One euro is equals to 19 Namibian dollars and 95 cents. £1 sterling is equals to 22 Namibian dollars and 88 cents, while one Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars and 30 cents. One Swiss franc is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 39 cents. Now moving over to trading economics. European stocks swung between small gains and losses on Friday, weighed down mainly by mining and energy shares. Now sentiment was pressured after China tightened export controls on rare earth and related technologies and barred its citizens from engaging in unauthorized overseas mining. Meanwhile, oil prices declined as the ceasefire in Gaza took effect, easing concerns about the crude shipments through the Suez Canal and the Red Sea. Now, among individual movers, CN Mines Energy fell 3.1%, Isocro Mittal dropped 2.9%, Shell lost 1%, and BP declined 0.7%. Now, defense stocks were also under pressure, with Safran down by 1.5%, Rain Metal at 2.3%, Rank at 2.6%, and Leonardo at 4.3%, and Hans Salt at 4.7%. On the other hand, Stellantis gained nearly 1% after reporting an increase, a 13% increase in the second quarter deliveries, and Mercedes-Benz added 2.1%. Portugal's trade deficit widened to 2.98 billion euros in August 2025. That's up from 2.67 billion euros a year earlier, as exports fell 1.3% to a four-year low of 5.10 billion euros. Now, the decline was driven mainly by fuel and lubricants at -25.6%, partially offset by transport equipment at +10.8%. And by destination, exports dropped to Spain at -5.8% and the Netherlands at -22.2%. Now, that is largely due to fuel and lubricants, and to Germany at -9.9%. Producer prices in Kazakhstan rose by 6.5% year-on-year in September 2025, slowing slightly from 6.7% in the previous month. Now, on a monthly basis, producer prices edged up 0.2%, easing from the 2.2% rise in August. For the January-September period, producer prices were up 7.4% compared in the same period a month or a year earlier. Now, that's what we had for you today in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. We pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace, and right before you know it, we're back to tell you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia.
Great news! Imper just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imber? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imber has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imber, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa.
Saiso.
Otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oi jamwiri nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. And now for news beyond the borders of Namibia, we start off regionally, move over to continental news, thereafter international news. Now we're starting off in South Africa, where President Ramaphosa of South Africa calls for a free economic system in Brussels. Let's take a listen.
For the president of the World Bank, I could touch money. And as I greeted you, and President Lorenzo, I could touch power in your hands, both of you as leaders of the EU and Africa. But as I encountered President Tshisekedi and President Kagame, whom I'm sitting next to, I could feel the energy for making peace. So I'm in a good place.
Friends and foes gathered under one roof, brought together by same interests. Trade and investment opportunities. The Global Gateway Forum brings together leaders from Africa, Latin America, and Europe to strengthen international partnerships. President Cyril Ramaphosa used his address to call for a renewed commitment to peaceful cooperation and fair global governance.
Circumstances that the world faces now require comprehensive, coordinated, and forward-looking solutions. And these challenges, in fact, call for a renewed commitment to the peaceful resolution of conflict, respect for international law, the strengthening of multilateralism, and the progressive reform of international bodies like the United Nations and the WTO.
He also weighed in on the current challenges facing the globe.
As we work to strengthen trade and investment ties, we must also address those issues that hold back more robust, more diverse, and more impactful trade and investment between the African and European countries. We need to work together to overcome the tariff and non-tariff barriers that constrain the breadth and the scale of African exports to the European Union. We must use investment and trade as effective tools and instruments to foster industrialization on the African continent.
He also drew attention to Africa's ongoing struggle with debt and inequality, urging fairer access to finance and greater support from multilateral institutions.
In my view, simply unacceptable that many developing economy countries pay much more for their debt than what more developed economy countries pay. This unfair treatment perpetuates inequality, not only between individuals, but amongst countries as well.
With South Africa preparing to host the G20 Leaders Summit next month, Ramaphosa said the Global Gateway Initiative and the G20 must work hand in hand to ensure solidarity, equality, and sustainability across the global economy.
I do believe that together we can foster inclusive growth, we can build resilience, and we can create a sustainable and secure future for all our people. Working together with the private sector, with state agencies, development banks or financing institutions, and various other stakeholders, the world will be a much better place. And I do believe we should get on with it.
President Ramaphosa's engagements in Brussels form part of South Africa's broader effort to attract investment, create jobs, and position the country as a key player in global innovation and green growth. I'm Bethali Pile, SABC News.
Meanwhile in Zambia, Zampost embraces digitization to enhance service delivery.
Lavin Spiri is among many young Zambians who have relied on the Zambia Postal Services, Zampost, to send and receive documents. For close to 2 years, Lavnis has also been sending documents on behalf of her company and its clients. She narrates to ZMBC News on how efficient and reliable the services are, making her experience more valuable.
So we send documents and we receive documents from here, and it's really convenient. It's quick and trustworthy. Anyone can use it. It's not about the odd times, and it's in our era too.
Other beneficiaries also shared similar sentiments, highlighting how quick and convenient it has become to send and receive parcels through Zampost.
It's been very convenient. I've used the post office 3 times to get things, and it has been very, very convenient. They're very reliable.
I just use the transfer service, but the products arrived in good condition from here in Lusaka to the Copper Belt. And then I also got the feedback because I was also receiving some parcels, so I also got the feedback, and they are in good condition, very sealed and properly packed.
Meanwhile, Zampost Director of Operations Boniface Miller highlights the success of the company's service delivery.
We know, of course, that the traditional services that the post office has been offering for many years are now dwindling because of the advent of technology. But we are not left behind. We are diversifying our services so that we can leverage technology to offer modern and acceptable services to the members of the public.
Zambia joins the global community in commemorating World Post Day under the theme Post for People, Local Services, Global Reach. Margaret Luhanga, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
Gold-backed zinc currency shows stability.
Introduced in April 2024 to replace the struggling Zimbabwean dollar, unlike previous currencies, the ZiG is backed by gold and foreign reserves, making it one of the boldest monetary moves in the country's history. Inflation has since slowed, and officials say public trust is gradually returning, with statistics showing more payments are being made in ZiG, a sign that monetary reforms are beginning to stabilize the economy. Although annual inflation remains high, authorities and economists say these results reflect the positive impact of monetary policy measures. But not everyone is experiencing this relief.
That growth in usage may be restricted to the formal sector, because out here on the streets and in Zimbabwe's informal sector, the US dollar has retained its significantly dominant advantage.
Traders I spoke to say the operating environment remains tight and there's a short supply of the local unit.
We are reducing prices to try and get more sales. Demand is weak. People don't have much money at the moment. But the ZiG is starting to gain some popularity. But its supply is limited. So that may affect its uptake.
The central bank has deliberately restricted supply of the ZiG, a strategy that's meant to control inflation, but which businesses warn could limit its role in the economy. Zimbabwe's annual ZiG inflation eased to 82.7% in September from nearly 94% in August, with officials saying stronger reserves could help them stay on top of inflation and create more stability for Zimbabweans who are yet to fully embrace the new currency.
Inflation had not been going up so significantly,
but at the same time meeting the target of around 50% by December might be a very tough call at the moment, I think, given the trend of inflation. However, I think it's kudos to central government for somehow managing to control money supply. But what is more significant is balancing the liquidity position and the ZIG stability. But once you create illiquidity to protect the ZIG, it's also a tax which is indirect to business.
The central bank, however, insists it has done the groundwork to anchor the ZIG, especially building up reserves to back the currency. The Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe has focused on managing the exchange rate and controlling the money supply to stabilize the ZIG.
We are accumulating our reserves from royalties, but also from the export surrender. From zero, we are now close to $1 billion. And we expect that with especially the bullish gold subsector, we expect our reserves to continue increasing.
The US dollar-based consumer price index used for many expenses in urban areas recorded zero inflation in August, down from 0.3% in July. Food and non-food prices remain stable, providing relief for workers who are paid in US dollars. On an annual basis, this dollar-based index rose 14.2%, well below the inflation recorded in ZIG, although it still reflects the impact of imported prices. For policymakers, the stability shows that the country is moving away from the old cycles of hyperinflation that marked its recent history. Farai Makutuya, CGTN, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Northern Mozambique is plagued by recurrent extremist violence.
They leave devastation in their wake. A militant group calling itself Al-Shabaab is waging war in northern Mozambique. Linked to the Islamic State, they have been accused of brutal atrocities, including beheadings. In just 7 days this month, one wave of violence forced nearly 22,000 people to abandon their homes, one of the largest mass displacements this year. For many, it wasn't the first time. For others, it may not be the last. Cabo Delgado has endured 8 years of relentless terror, with over 1.3 million people uprooted from their homes since the insurgency began in 2017. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, reports that all 17 districts in the province are now directly scarred. What is even more alarming is that families who once gave refuge to the displaced are now being driven into flight themselves. This year has seen a sharp surge in violence, with more than 500 incidents reported by August, already higher than the worst spikes recorded in 2022. Raids, abductions, and the destruction of homes and infrastructure have become alarmingly common. Civilians are bearing the brunt, with reports of killings, kidnappings, and sexual assaults. Children are increasingly at risk of being forced into armed groups. Women and girls are particularly exposed when venturing out to fetch water or firewood, while the elderly and people with disabilities are often unable to flee when attacks happen. Many of those caught in the crossfire are left with deep scars. The insurgent group has been battling for dominance over a region abundant in natural gas and valuable minerals, including hydrocarbons, graphite, and rubies. In July 2021, the French multinational Total Energies was compelled to halt its $20 billion liquefied natural gas venture after a devastating assault on the town of Parma. Later that year, close to 3,000 troops from the Southern African Development Community, SADC, and Rwanda arrived. Their presence brought relative calm, with aid agencies and government officials observing improved security and a slow return to normalcy in some areas. However, 3 years into their deployment, the SADC's mission in Mozambique, SAMIM, announced its withdrawal, declaring its mission accomplished. The stability was short-lived. Since December 2023, violent attacks have surged once again, and the Total Energies project remains suspended to this day. Rwanda has maintained its presence with an estimated 5,000 personnel, including both soldiers and police, still on the ground. Tanzania, which had initially sent troops under Samim, chose to keep about 300 soldiers stationed in Nangade district along its border with Mozambique after the mission ended. Yet, since December 2023, attacks have steadily escalated. Enoch Sikolia, CGTN.
Meanwhile, Nigeria plans to triple tax on foreign investors.
From January, foreign investors selling Nigerian shares will pay 30% capital gains tax, up from the current 10%, unless they invest locally. The measure, part of Nigeria's 2025 Tax Reform Act, is meant to raise funds and curb speculative trading.
And one of the ways government borrows is to go to capital markets and then list securities there. If you bring in this investment and you cash it after a year, they go back again to the market to go and borrow again. But if you invest and you keep it on and then you reinvest the profit, you're reducing how many times government goes to market, if you know what I mean, so they can plan longer.
Nigeria's stock market has surged nearly 40% this year, powered largely by foreign inflows that make up about 21% of total trades. But traders say the new tax could slow that momentum and dampen investor interest.
The announcement has really rattled the market, because if we are looking for foreign investors, we want people to be included and participate in our markets. When they realize that they are going to be paying so much, you know, as against what they bargained for when they were coming at the entry point, I want to say that it's going to be a kind of a disincentive to them, and the possibility of them, you know, trying to reduce their portfolio in Nigeria is very high.
This tax hike is one of several fiscal measures under President Tinubu's reforms, from removing fuel subsidies to floating the naira. While these steps aim to stabilize Nigeria's finances, the challenge remains keeping investors engaged as taxes rise.
The government is also introducing a 20% income tax on foreign workers earning above $521 a month. Despite these measures, tax revenue still accounts for only 10% of GDP, far below the IMF's 15% target.
They've given them enough incentive to just keep this money here for us to use. And then even more incentive when they now say to them, if you don't take this away, then I'm not going to tax you. If you reinvest that profit to listed and unlisted securities, I will withdraw my tax. So that's another additional incentive for them to keep the money.
If the government can reconsider its stand on this, especially maybe reducing the percentage, you know, from that 30, 25 to maybe 20, you know, that might help Montas. At the same time, I want to say that I want to recommend that for local indigenous companies that have been paying dividend regularly to investors, you know, maybe they could get some relief, tax relief, you know, that will enable them to do more.
Analysts say the policy's success will depend on how well the government balances its need for revenue with maintaining investor confidence. Kilechi Emekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
Meanwhile, Kenya Project looks at impact of climate change on women's mental health.
A new project studying the effects of climate change on mental health has found that droughts and heat waves are linked to higher levels of suicidal thoughts. Elizabeth Amina Kadenge is a farmer in Kaloleni, one of the poorest areas of Kenya. She says the changing climate is a major source of stress. My maize yield failed this season, unlike cassava, which performed well. While the loss of maize is already a setback, my bigger concern is the lack of subsistence food. Maize takes about 3 months to mature and be ready for harvest. In contrast, cassava planted today won't be harvested until around this time next year. This means that during this entire period, I will have to spend money to buy food, something I wouldn't need to do if my maize yield had been successful. It's a serious challenge as I now have to rely on purchases instead of feeding my household from my own harvest. Scientists behind the project surveyed nearly 15,000 women in rural Kenya. It's the first time a study of climate anxiety has been done with women in the region.
We have to talk to them, we have to ask them, engage them, but it was purely a quantitative question that we've asked, you know, so do you have any suicidal thoughts or ideation? If you do, you know, do you have it every day, on several days a week? Do you have it a few times a month? So it's because of that standard questionnaire, but then we don't ask them more onto that, you know, about how they did it, why they did it, what made them do that. So those are not something that asked.
Zulma Raleigh directs the Brain and Mind Institute in Nairobi. He says there are multiple dimensions to climate change.
If you want resilient communities, you can't not be thinking about mental well-being as well. So I think that as a very important component of building resilient communities. And so I think that there should be more infrastructure to provide mental health support in those communities, as well as try to figure out ways of dealing with the shortages that they will experience, for example, in water supply and things like that.
The project was conducted ahead of World Mental Health Day on October 10th. It's an international day for global mental health education and advocacy.
Venezuela's Maria Corina Machado has been awarded the 2025 Nobel Peace Prize.
The Norwegian Nobel Committee has decided to award the Nobel Peace Prize for 2025 to Maria Corina Machado. She is receiving the Nobel Peace Prize for her tireless work promoting democratic rights for the people of Venezuela and for her struggle to achieve a just and peaceful transition from dictatorship to democracy. Ms. Machado has been a key unifying figure in a political opposition that was once deeply divided, an opposition that found common ground in the demand for free election and representative government.
Meanwhile, Russia has launched 450 drones on Ukraine overnight, Zelensky says.
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky said Russia targeted the country with 450 drones and 30 missiles in a countrywide attack targeting the energy sector overnight on Friday, causing power outages across nine regions. Kyiv's mayor Vitaly Klitschko said on social media that five people had been injured in Russian attacks on the capital. Officials in Zaporizhia said a seven-year-old child was killed in an airstrike there. Ukraine's Minister for Energy said that Moscow was carrying out a massive strike on energy infrastructure. President Zelensky has urged decisive actions from allies after the strike. Our correspondent Gary O'Donoghue has the latest from Kyiv.
Well, the numbers of injured are more than that in Kyiv. We know that at least a dozen people were hurt here. Five, we think, are now in hospital. But we're waiting, really, for some detailed numbers about overnight and how many missiles, how many drones got through. This was really a sort of a biggish night for the capital, when it's been relatively quiet for the last 12 or 13 days. And certainly from where I was here, I heard three drones getting through into the city overnight. A lot of anti-aircraft fire, trying to take those down, of course. You mentioned, of course, Zaporizhia. Zaporizhia is one of those places that is constantly under bombardment, and a seven-year-old boy there died of his injuries. But what you're seeing here is Russia, ahead of the winter, really focusing in hard on Ukraine's electricity and gas infrastructure. And we know that there are a lot of people here in Kyiv, and that this will be true elsewhere, that are without power this morning, and also in some cases, which is more unusual, without water. So you can see that that's going to have an immediate impact on people's lives. We'll get some assessments later on of just the quantity and the nature of what was fired, but certainly initial indications are that there weren't just drones, that there may have been cruise missiles and may have been even ballistic missiles fired.
Meanwhile, Paris president has been removed by Congress, and the legislature chief has been sworn in.
Peru's lawmakers swore in Congress chief José Geri as the country's new president less than an hour after unanimously voting to remove President Dina Boluarte on Friday, one of the world's least popular leaders. The late-night vote and swearing-in made Geri Peru's seventh president since 2016, with three ex-leaders behind bars. Geri, a 38-year-old member of the conservative Somos Peru party, declared war on crime.
The main enemy is out on the streets, criminal gangs and criminal organizations. They are our enemies today, and as enemies, we must declare war on crime. To do so, we have our national police, we have our armed forces, and we must commit the other institutions of the state.
Crowds outside Congress and the Ecuadorian embassy, where Boluarte was rumored to seek asylum, celebrated with flags, music, and dancing.
With that, we have now come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Radar News Analysis. To stay tuned now for the Onkonana Dengue program brought to you by Matthias Hangara. And from Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow from 1900 hours up until 2100 hours for live lessons. Goodbye, and have yourself a wonderful weekend ahead.